Kelly, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am delighted to have you on today. Now, for those that have just tuned in, can you tell us a little bit about who is Kelly Saville, your background, your career journey? So Kelly, over to you.
Hey, so for me, I'm a technologist, which didn't start out that way, but that's what I love doing because it's always so, there's always something new. It's always different. It's always changing, which means there's always something for me to learn. So for me, I'm someone who I get energized by trying something new. I get energized by the people around me. And technology is so, so broad. There's so many different aspects you can drill into that it keeps me interested. There's a bit of a pattern to it, a bit of logic to it, that once that goes like that and clicks, then that's when the creativity comes in. And for me, look, if I do rewind, when I was a teenager going, well, what do I want to do with my life? You know, as your parents put the pressure on you, I had no idea. Dad had brought computers home, and as happens with most teenage girls, whatever dad says pretty much doesn't fly. So for me, then when it came to, okay, well, what am I going to do for uni? I had done computer science as an elective at school. And it was pretty much of, well, this is all right. It's interesting. It's a bit of fun. Let's see what ends up. And that why not is something that's followed me through my career. So I worked at a large corporate for many years, which meant that what felt like about every 2 years, we went through a restructure, which meant my role was impacted. But for me, it was very much that why not mentality was, well, with that, there's going to be new roles created. What ones out there do I like that I think I would be good at, that there's something I'm going to learn? And that's how I sort of went through my career, which got me to where I am now. And it's around bringing all of that together as a CTO. And now, because I've got that breadth, it's not just about me. It's about bringing those next people through. So they bring their skills, their experiences, but how do I amplify that? How do I support them? How do I bring that out so that they can add value as well and work with the people across the business so that their ideas come in and all kind of, you know, meshes together so that together we actually deliver something that is fit for purpose, scalable, innovative, and really meets their needs.
Exciting. And you said a few key words there that keep on coming up on these podcasts, the curiosity piece, the problem solving. Like, that is just something that I believe we all have to have now, this curiosity. We can't just shut things down because we don't understand it. But it's always fascinated me. So you've got now 20 years, like 2 decades in tech, right? So like that's really, really, really interesting for me, because when I reflect on my childhood, like I remember like when my dad first, we had a computer in our house as well. And I must have been about 14 when a computer was introduced into our household. And all I did on it was play games and chat on MSN to my friends. And it was dial up, and I was having massive disagreements with my dad. He was like, get off the internet. I need to use the phone. So that was like my experience of tech. But had I had somebody maybe in the family or a role model that was sort of in technology or doing something in tech, I probably would have been more open to the idea. So when did you sort of really know that that was going to be your career path? And perhaps like what was like the key pivotal moments throughout those sort of 20 years that has also helped you get to where you are today as like a CTO? So I think that would be really fascinating.
Yeah. So for me, so other than obviously initially choosing to do technology and getting to, it was around for me was initially was just, I went to the grad roles. I got a grad role. I worked in, and most people won't even know what it was because even I didn't at the time. I started out with an AS for 100 because again, it was that why not mentality. And the key pivotal moments for me were probably the first one was when I decided to go into people leadership. So I was like, okay, I've kind of got this. I've mastered this. What's next? And there was a role in the organization that came up, and it was about me having, I suppose, the confidence in myself, but also selling someone else on that and starting in that people leadership journey and just trying something different. And I found that was something that I really enjoyed because it's not just about me. It's about learning from the other people in the team and taking them on the same journey together. Probably the next key pivotal moment for me was really when data came about. So there was a new division being created in our organization. And at the time, all it was they appointed a GM, myself and three other heads off. We had a clean sheet of paper. There was departments across the organization that had some aspect of data and they brought that together. But for us, it was around, okay, well, what's my title? How do what I do differ from what you do? So I was really understanding each of our strengths and how we pulled that together and then created a vision. And finally you went to, okay, well, what are the names that need to go in the boxes? And you worked all of that out. So really creating something from scratch and understanding how to do it rather than just taking on board, this is what I've been told to do. I'll just deliver what I've been asked. Having that ability to create and see that change was really important. And then probably the third one was, as I mentioned, I worked a long time at a corporate. I was 22 years in one company, big company, lots of different roles. But for me, it was, I didn't have a brand outside that company. I went, okay, well, do I stay and become a lifetime career with that company, which was a possible option? Or do I spread my wings? And at the time, I decided to spread my wings. And I don't regret it one bit. I've got to meet some fantastic people, get outside my comfort zone, learn new things, and really grow.
I love the fact that you've got three things. So the first thing that you did was step into a leadership role. How old were you when you took on your first leadership role?
I would say I was probably my late 20s. So,
wow. Okay. Yeah. Can we actually stop there? Because that's really interesting to me. So you stepped into a leadership role. Now, tech is very male dominated. So I'm just imagining 28-year-old Kelly who's stepping into a leadership role. I imagine you've got some men to manage. How did you go about that? What was that experience like?
So for me, I probably want to start actually when I went to uni. I'm one of three daughters. I have aunts. I now have nieces. My family's entirely female other than, you know, hubby and brother-in-laws. When I went to uni, I've come out of that female background and I was one of three females in a course of 50 people.
Wow.
So that was a real change for me. And good side was all of a sudden I had 15 big brothers looking out for me, which was really, really cool. But doing that, it then became the norm. So when I, throughout my career, I was like the only thing, I stood out. Everyone knew who I was. I might know their faces, but there was just too many people because I was the, tall, blonde, I was young, and then taking on that leadership role and all the people who reported to me were male, all my bosses were male, and it wasn't, I don't think, till about my mid-30s I even had a female manager. So I didn't even have a female leadership or a model to work off other than those that there were some people much higher up, but not in my immediate vicinity. So for me, it was because I'd learnt that through uni of like, well, how do I become friends with a person? How do I get to know them? It was very much that empathetic style of, okay, well, what are the skills of these people? What value can they offer? What is it that I bring that's different to that role and complements them in the team? So I had to get over myself in terms of being the only female in the room very early on. And then when you take on then leadership, it's not really any different because everyone I work with is male. It was almost an assumption that I would be leading all males. And it was quite different But then it came around, it was actually the opposite, then having another female, because I hadn't had necessarily that role model myself of other strong females. It was, okay, well, I need to do this differently. So what is that different way? Because you go from a very blokey environment that it is different. I mean, I went through the original where on the floor they brought in all the sexual harassment stuff and everyone had to go through the training. There was posters of girly calendars. There was someone that even had a blow-up doll on their desk. And that was the environment that I'd gone into. So then when I got a team that actually appreciated the value that I added, that was just nice. Like I had people that trusted me. They knew that I understood what their strengths were. I would let them lead in those areas, but I had their back and I would compliment them as well. So where they were good at things, fine, I don't need to step over there and let them shine. But then when they did need that support, and like sometimes I would do it in the background, other times I would step in and was around complimenting them. But in terms of, there is a slightly different leadership style, but for me, that's not really about gender. It's about the person. Some people are creative. Some people more introverted, so therefore don't put them on the spot. Give them the question, give them time to go away, then they'll come back to you with a brilliant answer. Other people might be, they don't want to shine, so give them as part of a group, let them discuss that, and then they come back with the group answer without then shining. And others absolutely love being in the limelight. So it's really around getting to know the person, their strengths, they're what motivates them, but also what are the demotivators too.
So thank you for sharing that because I think that's really, really powerful. And look, the workplace has become a lot more safe now. We talk a lot about psychologically safe workplaces. And I think that this is something that is being really discussed. But back then, that's why I was really curious about, you know, what you had to go through in those early leadership years, because I don't think many people could really handle that. And I was like, even reading an article the other day about women leaving tech because of exactly that, because they feel unsafe, they don't feel seen, they don't feel valued. And there might not be blow up dolls in the office, but there's still inappropriate behavior going on and things like that. And it makes women especially feel very uncomfortable. And some women, instead of speaking up about it, or they don't feel safe to speak up about it, or maybe they don't think that their voice is really valued in the organization, they end up leaving. And I think that is just so tragic. And I think this is why conversations like this are really important, because you had to navigate all of that. And probably now, I can imagine now, if some guy blow up doll and decide to put a bit of a raunchy calendar up, you'd have something to say about that. It's like, excuse me, that is definitely not appropriate in this working environment. Take that down immediately, pop that blow up doll immediately. But back then, when you're sort of new to the workforce and you're new to leadership, I can, you know, because I reflect on younger Georgie, there's a lot of stuff when I reflect back on my early 20s that I would not accept or tolerate today. But as a young girl, and you're told and programmed as a young girl as well, be quiet, behave, don't make a fuss. And that program can hold us back in later years. And now, gratefully, I have worked on that. And I'll be the first to say, excuse me, you're making me feel very uncomfortable. But back then, because I didn't want to cause a fuss, I didn't say anything. But I can imagine now you wouldn't put up with that behavior at all.
No, and even at the time when they had the training, it was just even around what people would say to you. And I do remember conversations where someone who, because it was definitely a double standard, what I could say in the office was different from what I could say outside the office. And I had someone who, look, with what he said to me, had he said that down the local pub, I would have handled really easily. But in the office, I had to hold him to account because he could say what he wanted in the office, but I couldn't because, as I said, I stood out, but everyone remembered. And there was very much that double standard when it comes to females, which is lessened, but it does still come out every now and then. And it really is a matter of calling out that behavior because sometimes people aren't even aware of it. And you don't have to do it all the time, but it is something that needs to be done in the moment.
I completely agree. I just want to stay on the leadership piece for just for a moment more, because I have a lot of listeners that do listen to this, Kelly, that want to step up in a leadership role. And in a leadership role right now, on reflection, like for your journey with it, what's sort of like some of like the biggest sort of takeaways, like when you think like what really does make a great leader in today's world, what sort of comes to mind when you think about that, when you think about the traits and sort of the character that you need to really lead people and get the best out of people?
So the first thing for me is having a leader who will listen. So someone that will listen in terms of what are your ideas, what are your strengths, what are the opportunities, what are your challenges, so that they can leverage those. So what's the value that you add to the organization, but also what's the value that your leader provides to you? So where can they open doors? Where can they provide coaching? Where can they protect you sometimes, that, you know, because not everything work is perfect. You will make mistakes at some point in your career. It may not be, it generally isn't intentional, but it's around how people respond to that such that you make the most of it and you learn and grow. So the first thing really is around listening. So myself as a leader, I talk to my people. I try and understand what their strengths are, because I'm not an expert in everything. And they were employed for a reason. They bring skills and experience that I don't have. So I need to first off know what that actually is so that I can actually leverage it. But it's also not what people don't like doing as well. And that's why if you have that diversity in the team, one person may love doing something, but the thing that they hate, someone else may love doing. So it's around bringing that together. And as a leader, it's not just the one-on-one, it's how they can bring together that team of people that complement each other. It's also some of the small things as well. So just even stuff like just saying thank you, saying hello, acknowledging, it goes a long way. And I've heard stories. I was talking to a person I used to work with years ago, and she was telling this story how she's been in a role for 18 months, and with all the remote work and flexible work and different days, she hasn't had a single skip level meeting with her one-up manager in 18 months. So she has really lost that connection and that sense of value. So it really is around, if you sit down and you listen, you understand what value people offer, but then you show that recognition and appreciation and are actively looking out and advocating for those people. So if you know there's something that they want to learn, you have the conversation with them, and there might be opportunities that you're aware of that they're not, or vice versa. And it's around talking through this. Some of them might come off, some of them might not. But having that open dialogue and that trust is just so important.
Yeah, I'm smiling because the listening piece is just so important, getting to know your people, what motivates them, what drives them. I think that this is maybe the mistake that's being made now in organizations, is that we're just sort of blanketing everyone with the same brush. Like, you know, even like the work from home days, right? Like, I feel like we need to kind of be a bit more aware of the individual and what their needs are. How am I going to get the best out of this person? For example, if Kelly's got, you know, two young children at home, maybe Kelly would actually really benefit from having that extra day from home. And I've noticed that Kelly's actually more productive on the days that she's in the office less. And then there's Sandra over here who actually could really do with a bit more mentoring and coaching on the job. So maybe let's bring, like, I feel like we just, individual one-on-ones are so important to understand what drives this person, what they want to get out of their career. And as a leader, I do really believe that it's your responsibility to get the best out of your people. And how can you get the best out of someone if you don't know what drives them, why they come to work every day? So I love what you just said then about listening and really understanding your people. You also said something really interesting about that, you know, you did mention the work from home piece there and how the one-to-ones were slipping. I'll put my hand up to say that during COVID, when our team went fully remote quite quickly, there was so much that slipped like that. Like we were all scrambling. We didn't really know what to do. Like, but these little habits that we created of like every quarter we sat down, and it wasn't a performance review or anything like that, but it was like a check-in. How are you going? What's going on? And that completely went for about 6 months until I realized, oh God, like all these really good habits that we created, these one-on-ones, they're just completely gone now. Because I almost felt I had like Zoom fatigue. I was like, the last thing I want to do now is jump on a Zoom and do a one-to-one when I've been on Zooms all day. So it was really tough, but I was like, no, that's not an excuse, Georgina. You just have to bring it. But what advice would you have for people that are managing teams remotely in the office? Like what's that done, do you think, in your personal opinion, to like culture of organization? Has it made leadership easier, harder? Like, what are your thoughts around that? I'd love to get your opinion.
To a certain extent, I actually think it's a little bit easier, because if I do a rewind back pre-COVID, everyone working from home, I used to already mix up the way I did my connections with people. So I had one person that we used to do a walking one-on-one. We got out of the office, we did a lap around the MCG, and we came back to the office. And we covered work stuff. There was some other stuff going on with this person at the time, but that's what worked for that. Other ones, I would get the whiteboard out and start whiteboarding and coming up with ideas. And other ones were just your more traditional ones. Whereas then when it went to the remote, you've got people that are much happier working from home. So they're more happy in this environment. You've got other people who just basically their energy, if they're not at home, like if they're in the office, is so much higher than when they're at home. So you still have to differ your mode, but there's little tips and tricks to work out what works for your team. So one of the habits that I brought in during COVID that I actually maintained after that was a morning check-in. So if I rewind pre-COVID, if people weren't in the office by, I don't know, 9:30, 10 o'clock, you started to get a bit worried. Now we can't see whether they're in the office or not, because they could be working away or something could be wrong. So I do a morning check-in with the team, which is just a little note to the team. It might be a meme I've seen that made me smile. It might be some news that I saw that's relevant to the team. It could be a link to a comedy skit. It could be anything. Sometimes if I was really struck for lack of creative, you know, stance, it might have been something about the weather. But it was something that with the team, it meant that it was a bit of a conversation starter. And it meant, look, all people need to do is give me a reaction. It just had to be a thumbs up. Didn't really matter. It knew that I was safe, that they were safe, that they were online, and often there would be that bit of reaction. So we had our separate chat that was almost like the fun chat that connected everyone. Didn't matter where they were. And we had other little habits. So Friday afternoon, we would do the 9-letter quiz. And everyone knew about 2 o'clock, that would pop up. Everyone would jump in, do the 9-letter puzzle. We had team meetings where at the end of it, like when we did our monthly ones, we would just switch and do the age quiz. But it was around just getting that balance where everyone came together and it wasn't always about a work topic. It wasn't always where someone had an agenda. It was something that was a level playing field that everyone brought together. So having the different meetings. So I was one of the first people way back when to trial flexible working and working from home, and I loved it. So I've always been a hybrid work advocate. While I love interacting with people face-to-face, I call my days at home, they're my catch-up days. And everyone's different in terms of what the right balance is, but the key to it is making sure you've got the same level of connection. So there still does need to be some face-to-face time, but it's around creating that connection and a connection that works for the individual. And I see my role as a leader as I'm the one in that environment that needs to be flexible, because my role as a leader is to draw out the experience and the thought leadership from those within my team and more broadly across the organisation. So I'm the one who will adapt to them. There's always me that's there, but it's around what's going to work best together. And we've got more options now. So it is definitely, as you were saying, it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that I'm very similar to you that we, Pam and I had our business. We were always working from home one day a week before COVID even happened. So I was always a big advocate for hybrid, and we used to work from home, the whole team, on a Friday, sometimes on a Monday as well, like just occasionally dependent on what we had on. But we just naturally did that. And then we went to COVID, it was fully remote. But that's when I really started to struggle, because I'm somebody that likes the interaction. I'm a bit of an extroverted personality, but I also really loved my days from home, because like you, they were my catch-up days. They were my organization days, getting on top of days, probably my most productive days, so I wasn't being interrupted by the team. But then what I found was, because I had those days of that bit of decompression just to get my workload done, when I was then in with the team, I could be more present with them, because I wasn't there thinking, oh God, I need to do that presentation. I need to do that. I need to get that done. I was just there. And those days were really about them, not about what I needed to get done. And I think that that's why I'm a big advocate for hybrid, because I think it's just really important to have those days, especially as a leader, when you've got, you know, your role is to manage people, to have those days from home, just to actually catch up with also the key things that you need to do in your day job, as well as managing people. So I think that's really, really important and really well said. One thing I want to go back to is your sort of third pivotal moment in your career, when you said that you've been in that big organization for 22 years. Now, the easy option would have been just to stay there. I'm sure you could have just kept on working your way up through that organization, you know, constantly getting promotions, more money, et cetera, and all the benefits that come from working for an organization for a long time. What was it that made you decide to take that leap of faith and go and do something else? Like, because 22 years in a company, you become quite institutionalized. You're like, you know, is there life above this company? Like, so what was it? What was the final sort of thought process you thought, no, now is the time to do it?
For me, well, there was another restructure. So that was obviously a little bit of a catalyst. But I'd been thinking about before that anyway. So it was really, what's out there? I feel like I've got more I can bring. And I had moved around across the delivery side, the operational side, the support side. I had that breadth. I was around, okay, how can I piggyback off this and look at what's out there? The other aspect was, people remember you at a point in time. So I was starting to feel like people remembered the Kelly of 10 years ago, of 15 years ago. And that was, to a certain extent, limiting my opportunities, because everyone did know you. So I was like, okay, what else is out there? Who else can I engage with? But I suppose one of the real challenges for me then was around, how do I create that brand? I hadn't been doing the networking events. I didn't really even have a social media presence, let alone be posting actively on LinkedIn. So what I did was actually spoke with my leader at the time, and he put me in partnership actually with someone in marketing to understand, okay, well, how do you do that? How do you create your brand? Who gave me just some really simple things around how to start. So often you create your own energy and your own momentum, but if you don't know what step one or step two is, it can be really hard to do that. And then you get on that learning journey. So it was around partnering on someone who gave me just a little bit of guidance at the start. And then I created that. It's like, okay, well, now I'm going to start. I had a long career. I've learned lots of things. How do I share that with other people? And you take inspiration from what happens in the workplace, which was quite funny, because a couple of the times it was something that I would post and then I'd have someone on the side and have a little bit of a chuckle of like, oh, we know what you wrote that. You know, that reinforced to me was actually people actually listening, people reading, I have got something of value to offer. And that didn't always have a conscious reaction on it or comment or anything like that, but you just found out it's around what else is out there. And then you do discover different styles of organizations and different norms. And every organization has got a slightly different culture and a different norm. And even within a large organization, every pocket has slightly different cultures. And it is around finding what is that right fit for you. But for me, it was around just spreading my wings. What else is out there? And just going for it.
Mm-hmm. yeah, sometimes you have this thought, but it's the push you need, like there's a restructure or there's whatever there is. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, the universe has intervened here and it's happening. So I'm going to got to do this now. But I love what you said about reinventing yourself. That's really interesting how if we stay in organizations for too long, we just get known as, oh, that's Kelly in IT. And it's like, actually, no, Kelly is more than just, you know, a technologist. Kelly is, you know, a professional and has goals and dreams and a vision. And I talk about this a lot, actually, and I'm glad you've brought it up, about the idea of your personal brand. And that doesn't have to mean that, you know, you're posting on LinkedIn every single day, you're an influencer and you're speaking on all sorts of panels and at talks or things like that. But it's just it's been a thought leader in your space. And like you said, you have so much information and wisdom to share. And why would you not want to share that? If you've got something of value to offer the marketplace, that's all it is. You're just sharing your experience, you're documenting, you're creating, you're just being like, oh, this is, you know, I've just read this interesting article. This is my thoughts. This is my key takeaways. You know, I think it's really, really important, especially for people out there that really want to take their careers to the next level, step into these leadership roles, step into these CTO roles. The opportunities that it will open up for you by being visible on LinkedIn, for example, a professional platform, is huge. That's how we've connected. Let's use this as an example, right? When I look for people to come on this podcast, I'll instantly go on their LinkedIn. I'll be like, is this person credible? Has this person got some good backgrounds? And will this person have some good stories and experience to share? But that's what I do go on if I haven't met that person before. And your profile, your brand was very professional. So I'm just want to point that out to say opportunities come to you when you first take that step, which you did. But that person that gave you some branding advice, what was step one? Like what did they say to you? Like, right, Kelly, this is what I recommend that you do.
Well, really the first part was just creating that social profile. I didn't even have a LinkedIn profile at the time. I didn't need one. So it was really
Well, so you were right in the beginning. This was like step number one. So this is fascinating now. So everyone listening to this is already on LinkedIn. You're already a step ahead of where Kelly was.
Exactly. But initially it was just find things that interest you, then add your own insights. So read up on whatever area of interest you've got. So in my case, it would be technology, or it would be whatever was the newest, latest, you know, maybe gadgets or ways of working or innovations, and then going, well, this is my view on it. So it started out with initially I just went, okay, here's an article. Is there a quote in that article that resonates with me? Let's just replay that quote and just write two or three sentences on why I think this is of value. Doesn't need to be anything long. And then you, over time, you sort of develop your voice, you develop your style. And it is also about looking at other people's styles that you go, oh, I like the way they wrote that. Oh, I could have written that. But it's a lot of it is just really around exposing yourself to other experiences, other viewpoints, and just making comments. So sometimes you go, oh, not really comfortable in even writing up my view, but it might be someone else put something that resonates with you and you just put a comment on there and it becomes habit forming. So the other part was give myself a target. So, and make them achievable, small targets that might be okay. So I'd started posting articles, writing a little bit about that. I'd started commenting on a couple, and I might just go, okay, well, I'm just going to do, like, the articles, like, I'll do one a week or whatever. It's like increasing that. But then it was, okay, now I need to write an actual LinkedIn article. So I gave myself a target. I'm going to do that next month. I'm just going to do one. Let's get one out of the way. And that first one probably is the one that took me the absolute longest to do, because you overthink it. You're not quite sure. You're not quite sure of the land. So, yes, I wrote it, but I spoke to other people as well. I got guidance from people. I'm all, okay, you've heard me talk in the workplace. What gems of wisdom have I come up with that I don't even realize is wisdom that you would be interested in reading about? And you have that talk to people and they give you ideas. It's like, oh, is that really that interesting? Well, it was, because you're bringing a different viewpoint that, because of different experiences that you've had. And you just put it out there. And for me, like, it almost became fun. So it's like, ah, I've got an idea on that one, or what could I say about that? And now when you've got the advent of AI coming in as well, you don't even have to be that good at writing. You just write up the basic, well, there's two things. You can either write up the basic structure and get it to make you sound a lot better than you thought. You probably would have got to it eventually, but it just makes it a lot faster. Or if you're really stuck on an idea, just ask it, oh, what are the top three topics of interest at the moment that a, and name your role, might be interested in? And then you look at those and go, well, actually, I know a lot about that topic. Okay, and then you might ask it another question to drill down. Okay, if I was talking on that topic, what are some of the key things I could talk about? And that gives you enough. Then you go, okay, yeah, I've got enough now. I can go off and write this myself. So you can, you have all your ideas, but now there's actual tools out there that will just accelerate that. You're not having to write everything from scratch and go over and over on multiple iterations you're not really sure about. You don't necessarily need to have a great grasp of English. It can perfect that for you. There's lots of opportunity out there, and it's just so much easier than it was when I started.
I know, 100%. I think I've been creating content on LinkedIn now for, God, coming up for like 10 years, right? Like, I've had the platform since day one. And if I had had ChatGPT back 10 years ago, I'd probably be like, you know, the number one LinkedIn poster in Australia by now. But it would definitely make things easier. But I love what you said, because it's like, and I want to go on, I'm glad we sort of touched on AI, because I want to sort of, I want your thoughts and opinion on it. But I love the fact that, like, if you can use it to your advantage, right? It does. I wouldn't recommend like putting, can you write me a post on the future of tech? Like, no. Let's not do that. Let's have our own thoughts, have our own opinions. But I love what you just said then about, you know, what are the number one searched topics right now in tech, and just sort of helping it give you some ideas. And then, cool, out of this topic here, can you give me 10 headlines that would be really eye-catching? Cool. And it's all about prompting it. And I think that's what one thing that keeps on coming up about prompting engineering. I keep hearing this term more and more about how, like, you know, the people that are going to be really, really sort of make the most of this next tech revolution are those that can really use AI really well. And that whole sort of prompt engineering is key to that. So I'd love to get your thoughts now of someone that's been in technology for 20 years. Everyone keeps saying, like, this is the biggest thing since the internet. This is me bigger than the internet. Like, you've seen that, you've been through that. What's your thoughts? Do you think it's going to be bigger than the internet? Do you what do you think is going to come into this world over the next sort of 2, 3, 5 years?
So absolutely, I'm definitely in that camp. For me, there are risks associated with just why some people have been very risk adverse of, well, what could go wrong? What does this mean to my brand and my IP if I let my data out there? Does that mean someone else can steal it? And, you know. So that's definitely a risk that organisations need to lean into. And then the other risk is, well, all the ethical concerns of, well, what generally happens is ethics is the precursor to laws. So ethics is just, there hasn't been a law made around it yet. So that's an area where businesses and particularly boards will actually be really interesting. But on the flip side of that, the risk is if you don't lean into this, the other businesses may thrive while you're just left standing still. So it's really that opportunity around how can you scale? So there is so much data out there now that AI really helps. So as an example, in a tech example, one of the big things that a lot of organizations struggle with, and this is over the last, you know, X number of decades, is legacy systems, which are systems that at one point were probably cutting edge. But now, because everything, they've built that and they've built everything else on top of it, they don't know how to get rid of that old technology that people don't even know how to support anymore. You bring AI in and it can find all this old code that you didn't even know still existed. It can work out the pattern. So now, instead of these billion-dollar projects that ultimately fail and people end up just building band-aids and different front ends around the old legacy technology, you can go and find out where it is and actually address it and be very targeted. So there's also lots of other opportunities around equality. So I've talked to people around where they've had people really adopt prompt engineering, and there's a lot around encoding space versus the people that haven't. And the quality of the code, the amount of times they can test in a day, the bits that they hate, like documentation, it's just so much faster. So their productivity actually goes up exponentially. And it's also the creativity. So we were talking before around coming up with ideas. It gives you that spot where you can just start from, and it takes away a lot of the repetitive bits that people just go, the admin bits that people just go, I know I have to do, but I don't really feel like doing it. I mean, it's even as simple as I had to present on a new policy. Right. And everyone at work, policy is boring, all the rest. But I had the policy document written and I used Microsoft 365 Copilot and said, create a presentation for me. And yes, I then had to go in and tweak it and make it fit and all the rest. But it gave me that starting point that is, I always say, it's much harder to create the first version. It's much easier to edit, iterate, and critique and improve. But that first version is a bit where you spend 90% of your time. And that's where it really helps us, such that instead of me wasting a heap of time going, oh, I've got to do this or whatever, it means that I can focus on where I add the value.
I'm nodding my head here, by the way, everyone, because I completely agree with what you're saying. And yeah, it is. It's a fantastic tool. I use it all the time. The amount of time it saved in my day, like I use this example a lot, but even this podcast, right? Like we use an AI tool that cuts up all the edits. So it just sort of like, I don't know exactly what it does, but it just like edits everything, uploads it, enhances the voice. It's incredible. That would have taken us like 3 hours, like before AI was involved. Now it takes 3 minutes. Right. So all this, so what I'm really sort of, where my head goes with all of this, and this was actually something that Kath Blackham said on our recent panel event, Assisted Social. She said, because it's going to free up a lot of time. Yes, there's going to be things that humans can do, like more time invested into your team and things like that. But that's why she's a really big advocate for pushing like a 4-day work week now. Cause she's just like, you know, we now don't need to be in the office from 9 till 5. Like actually, if we can really utilize this technology and it does a lot of the grunt work for us. And like you say, anytime I sat down to do a presentation or something, you're right. It is the brain power it takes to do the first, you know, sit down, okay, what am I going to talk about here? AI does that for me. And then I get to really focus on the really key pieces that I want people to take away from and really like making the presentation fantastic. But the time saves. It's like, it's going to be interesting. And I think like, you know, we went through the tech revolution, but we still work as if we're back in the industrial revolution. It's like with all of this productivity gains, surely we should claw some of that back for a bit of like maybe well-being, a bit more of like space for us to be a bit more creative, to maybe just sit and think, you know, as opposed to constantly always be doing, right? So I'm interested to see how people adopt this technology, but the creativity gains that we could have from this as well, because what I don't want to see is people be like, right, fantastic, I've just done that presentation in 30 minutes. And then they just keep on loading themselves up with more. And then we end up with like a culture of just like, you know, cyber zombies, because we're just constantly just on technology all day. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Do you think it could free us up to actually maybe go to a 4-day work week and spend more time doing creative tasks?
So absolutely, it could free us up. I mean, the other thing other than the 4-day work week is also about that education and training. So in tech, a lot of people always say, I'm too busy to do any form of training. It's like, well, if you go over here and you use AI to automate something that you don't like doing anyway, well, guess what? Yes, it'll take a little bit of effort to do, but now you've just freed yourself up. So that training course that you've always wanted to do, you've now got the time to do that. So in some workplaces, it just depends on the nature of the business, whether a four-day work will work or not. It can depend on the customer base and the like. But what it does do, it allows you to shift your day such that you have got that space for creativity or that space for that bit of fun or time with your family or even just going, okay, well, I'm going to work 5 days a week, but I'm only going to work the hours my kids are at school. Or I'm going to have family from overseas and I'm going to travel and do that. But I've set things up such that everyone that I need to be in contact with back here can still continue without missing a beat. So it really is understanding what those options are. And there are just so many more options, in particular with AI and those productivity gains, and as well as the quality. Because if you can use AI to increase your quality, then all that time you spent on rework and fixing mistakes, and it finds the errors much earlier, and that it's exponential in terms of how much productivity and time wasting it can help with.
I couldn't agree more. Final sort of thoughts on AI. What sort of jobs do you think are most at risk in your personal opinion? Like, you know, what jobs do you think we should be encouraging people to upskill on at this stage?
So in terms of upskilling, I would be saying prompt engineering. It is the way of the future. We're all going to have to learn how to do it, and it is quite different from the way you write a Google search. So if you think of, say you had a new grad coming to the office and you said, oh, can you just go and make me a cup of coffee? Well, it's their first day in the office. They don't even know where the kitchen is, let alone do you like it black, white, sugar, light milk. You've got to learn how to describe those things. And if you do that, then the output you're going to get is so much better. In terms of jobs that are at risk, it'll actually be a lot of the entry-level admin jobs as far as I'm concerned. So things like where you previously you get the grad come in and you get them to do some of that repetitive admin, well, AI is going to take care of that. So the challenge will be for grads, it's not just coming with they've been through uni, they've learned things. What are those skills that they can bring that can complement the organisation and actually hit the road running? So that's in your, I don't think we've got the answer for how we're going to do that yet, but it may be around how we engage with people and engage them through that journey at university, such that in terms of you think of like reverse mentoring, almost get them to mentor us on prompt engineering. So that's an area where they can bring to help us while they're learning the other skills that you need to be able to come up with what the right prompts are. So it is around complementing with that, but certainly a lot of those admin roles, they'll just evaporate. But those people will still be, if they can master prompt engineering, they'll still be valued. And it's around bringing their other skills and their other knowledge to really help the organization as a whole.
Yeah, completely agree. I think there's just not going to be one job on the planet that's not impacted, to be honest. Like, even if I think about recruitment, you know, there's a lot that we do which can be automated by AI. Like the bit that's obviously the real skill is the negotiation part, the really understanding the people part. You know, that sort of relationship building is really what can really set the great consultants, you know, above the average consultant. So it's going to be a really interesting world. I personally am really optimistic about the future. I think that we're going to go through some bumps and there's going to be some people that really struggle through this next sort of like 5-10 years. But those that come with this with like a curious mind and think to themselves, why not learn prompt engineering? Why not do an AI course? Why not? You know, I think that's what we've all got to do over the course of this next sort of couple of years. If we've got that, you know, time is not a luxury that we have now. This is coming whether we like it or not. But the final question, Kelly, and I think that this is always one that I'm really curious to ask, because look, the one thing that I always find the difference between females in tech and males in tech is, and I hate to say it because it sounds so cliche, but it's true. because I deal with a lot of people in tech every single week, as you can imagine, recruiting, the difference in confidence, like it is so, I call it my Georgie pep talk. And every single female that I'm prepping for a job, I'm like, listen, the interviewer is not wasting their time interviewing you if they did not think you were right for this job. They've seen your resume. They've seen what you're capable of. They've seen your LinkedIn profile. They have seen what you've done. Tick to them. You've got the interview. Now it's over to you to sell yourself. And it is fascinating to me how many females almost talk themselves out or come at the end of the interview, say, that didn't go as well as what I think I could have done. And I was really, it's like, but a guy, you just get me in there, Georgie, and I'll do the rest. It is mind-blowing to me, the difference. Not all females, but I would say a lot of women definitely have got this imposter syndrome, right? How have you overcome it? I'm sure you still get it now. We all do, right? It's not something that we're immune. And I think actually it comes more as we keep on stepping up and push ourselves to do more things. But advice for those that really struggle with their confidence and the belief in themselves.
So for me, and look, imposter syndrome, doesn't matter what level you're at, you still get it from time to time. But it's comes in, there's two things. One is reflection. So as you say, you're there for a reason. You're not there just to be a flower on the wall. There is value that you can bring. So then part of if you're really nervous, if you're really like, oh, I'm not really sure that I've earned a seat at this table, it's a bit around reflection and prep of, well, why am I there? What value can I add? And just challenge yourself. Keep it small. Just go, okay, this time, first time in that meeting, I'm just going to raise one thing. All right? I'm in a big room. I'm going to ask one question. I'm yet noticed. And start small. And then you do that first one. Oh, that was all right. And you build your own confidence. The other one that can be a really good one is around have someone that you trust there to act as an observer. So you brief with them beforehand in terms of, well, what's the meeting about? What's the role I'm playing? What's the role you're playing in the room? And then you debrief with them afterwards because they know what your plan was when you went into the room. They're there as a participant in the meeting, but they're also there to support you. And you can actually talk about, before you go in, where you want them to step in, but also where you want them to step back. So it might just be sometimes them saying, hey, Georgie, we had a great conversation. I know you've got an idea in this space. So sometimes giving you that voice. And other times, if someone else in the room is potentially talking over you or whatever, you might come in and then say, oh, Georgie said to me earlier, this, that, and the other. But you can agree that all before you go into the room. And then when you do the debrief afterwards, you always start with positive. What did you do well? And you talk to the person and get their sense of it first of, well, how did you feel? What things do you think you did well? Were there any areas you could have potentially done differently? And then you can go backwards and forwards and work out, well, okay, so if we were to replay that thing, what would you do differently? And then it becomes, you do that again. So then the next meeting. And over time, the difference, you'll grow, you build that confidence, you won't need that observer in the room anymore. But it really can help because that, even if the observer does absolutely nothing for you, just that sense of safety net can be really important for getting over that imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I love that because we're so often our biggest critics. To have someone there to actually point out all the things that we've done well. Because I think it's a natural tendency to focus on all the bad as opposed to all the good. And I've had to really work on this over the course of my career as well. Like, you know, if I've been on a panel or ran an event or something, I've really trained myself to come away from whatever it is and go, that was amazing, Georgie. Well done. Great job. And focus on all the things. I've really, really trained myself to focus on that. But then on quiet reflection, once I've sort of let everything process and sit down, I'll grab my journal and I'll be like, what went really well and what could I have done even better for next time? Because I'm not just going to be like, pat myself on the back. That was amazing. You're amazing. If I know there's always something to learn, there's always something that could be that little 1% better. What is that one thing? And that's how I'll keep getting better. But I will never criticize myself. I will never put myself down. I'll never say, oh, that was terrible. You stuffed up there. You could, because it's just the quickest way to demotivate myself, to stop myself from pushing myself to do uncomfortable things. And that's how people stay stuck. We've got to have the courage to push ourselves. And then remember that when we're doing something new, like even this podcast today, Kelly, I hope that you come away going, I was a fantastic and I gave so much value. But naturally, you'll probably like listen to it and go, oh, I could have done this, could have done this better. Like that is natural. But I think we need to be so aware of that voice in our head and focus on the fact that one, we showed up and we did it, tick. And two, you know, we did that well. And of course, there's a things to improve. But if we don't put ourselves in the situation in the first place, we never have the opportunity to get better. And that's how Absolutely. People get stay stuck and don't keep evolving as human beings. So yeah, I love what you said there about, and when this podcast comes out as well, send it to somebody that you trust and that you know is going to give you that really, like that's your biggest fan, but also your biggest critic. That's my husband. He will always keep me in check. He'd be like, that was amazing. But if I could say, and I've got to be in the right mood for it as well. If it's over the dinner table after a long day, I'm like, not now, Kyle. I don't want to hear that now. You just, you know, just keep telling me all the good stuff tonight. But look, Kelly, that was fabulous. So what's next for you? What are you working on now? What's where do you see your career going? And what's next for Kelly?
So for me, it's really around the opportunities out there to say, where can I add value? For me, I'm doing my own AI training at the moment. So I'm learning Amazing. All I can around prompt engineering, because it doesn't matter what the role is. It's something that if I can do that, not only do I help make myself more productive, but as an organization, we all have to learn it, and I'll just be that bit ahead of the curve. So for me, it's looking around like, you know, where can I transform something? Where can I take it from where it is today and transform it into where it needs to be tomorrow?
Love that. Well, I'll make sure that we put your LinkedIn profile Thank below, you. An example of what a great LinkedIn professional profile can look like, everyone. So make sure you go and follow Kelly, connect with Kelly. But it's been fantastic having you on. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.